This is Martin Rodriguez.
This is Greg McKenzie.
Welcome to the Gibbs postgame.
Yeah, welcome back after a while. It's been a minute, Martin.
Yes.
I don't know what happened to us, but here we are at last.
Yeah, no, I know what happened to me. I got really busy, and I got kind of depressed.
We're still allowed to blame the pandemic, right?
I think so. I'm allowed to.
These long gaps between episode releases.
Yeah,
alienating our listeners, you know, with our silence. But we're allowed to do that still because it's pandemic days. So.
Exactly, and to that point. This is important for listeners to know that I did this interview last August, right? So this is an interview that happened a year ago, right? When the decision to with Amos Young was like, it was still fresh. And in fact, we still had separate schools, you know, we still had a separate, you know, School of Intercultural Studies and the School of Theology. That's no longer true for Fuller.
Yeah. So part of Dr. Gibbs's wish has come to
fruition. Pass. Yeah. Thank you, Jesus. Yeah. You know what? We can just stop there and be like, that's awesome. You know, praise God for that. We want to thank you for being with us. And so there was a lot to appreciate in this interview, Greg. And one of them right at the beginning was the way he described how he came to missiology. And so that stood out to you. You and I got a chance to talk a little bit beforehand. So can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, I loved the phrase, I came to missiology through pain and failure. I think that's true for so many of us. I mean, even those of us, my story isn't exactly that. I didn't go to a foreign mission field with zero cross-cultural training like Dr. Gibbs did. But I think a lot of people do as he did and learn the hard way. I think even those of us that go trained, like you come back to the questions of missiology through pain and failure. And so I love the brutal honesty of that statement.
I do too. I really appreciate it. I you know, that kind of grassroots missiology, right? This, like, he's the ultimate example of that. I really do. I appreciate that as well. And I also think about, you know, in this context, then what are we talking about when we're talking about missiology? And I was thinking about the way in which we, you know, we end up on the mission field, some of us, and we've been trained to do cross-cultural, you know, which was cross-cultural communication was a big theme with Dr. Gibbs, with Eddie, and then we get to the mission field and we realize, you know, okay, I'm still making mistakes, right, and I'm still learning from those mistakes. Maybe if anything, what my training did was that, I'm asking better questions right at the beginning. You know, I'm thinking about my behavior in a way that is critical, you know, critically reflective, and maybe I'm even asking the right questions there, and I'm paying attention to certain things that I wouldn't have normally noticed early on. And in that sense, I appreciate that conception of missiology. But you had been to, you describe learning, you know, in Peru, learning to discern what God is up to, and how important that was for you.
Yeah, well, I think the underlying question here is I don't want to put words into Dr. Gibbs's mouth or say for him what missiology is, but as a listener to the interview, it struck me that to a significant extent, what he's talking about when he talks about missiology is that equipping for cross-cultural communication or for overcoming cultural barriers, right? Whether it's between him and Mapuche Indians in Chile or between his father and the Anglican Church, right? The barrier between sort of church ease and the language of the street or whatever. And of course that is like that cultural awareness, understanding, worldviews or just cross-cultural communication dynamics in the most instrumental terms. Those are all dimensions of mission training, of course. But for me, I think I learned in the mission field that those are not at the heart of mission, and therefore for me of the questions of missiology, right? Really at the heart is this sense that God is at work in the world, the triune God is moving and redeeming and transforming our lives, and in particular the lives of the neighbors that we engage with relationally. And so learning to discern what that is and how to engage that and all of the dimensions of that, perhaps it's fair to say far beyond just the cultural dynamics at work there, important as those are. In fact, the relational theme was one of the things that really stood out, right? And you highlighted this in our conversation.
Yeah, I do. I appreciate the relationality, that it was an emphasis in his conception of leadership and his conception of what it means to be an emergent church, how he defines it, right? Not how it's been defined by marketing gurus, folks trying to make money. But, you know, it's relationality is right at the center of this. And one of the reasons I love that is because I think about what it means to be a missionary, and I think about what it means even to be a missiologist who's thinking deeply about what, you know, the Missio Dei and what God is doing in the world. As I think about, you know, how some of the questions that we're asking, like how do I communicate the gospel, for instance, is a question that's just, it leads into so much complexity, right? There's just profound complexity when I walk across the street, right? So I across the street, I have a Filipino family that, you know, that we're friends with. And the thing is that it's just so different than like my New Age neighbor that lives right here. And so there's this complexity that I'm jumping into a friendship, a relationship. And again, this is why I love the relationality, is that I'm leaning into it with a willingness to learn, right? Like, teach me. I want to know about you, right? And I'm willing to make mistakes, and I'm willing to like learn from those mistakes. And if you're cool with it, let's be friends, and you can help teach me. When I think about that relationality, I think about how, you know, those cross-cultural challenges that he faced in Chile, they apply in the United States, right? Thank you, Newbegin. Right, these things that we've taken and we have thought deeply about in India, they apply here in Britain, right, in the United States, and yet, you know, in the midst of all of those cross-cultural challenges, I don't need a degree in missiology to walk across the street and make friends with my neighbors and introduce them to my friend Jesus, right? I mean, there's a sense in which I want you to know this person who's really important to me, and you're going to notice that I'm constantly walking with this person, with you, God. And so I love that relationality. I think it's a fantastic, wonderful response to all of the complexity that he sees. And it may be now more than earlier in his career, he's landed on relationality. And I love that. That's kind of the big emphasis in his leadership next, right? It's that, you know, be relational. And man, I really appreciated that from the interview.
So let's put the tension on the table, okay? Because there's this interesting tension, right, between the utility and even the need for intercultural, not only awareness but skillfulness for the ability to negotiate. Let's just locate it there in LA. Where you are, where I have been at one time. Okay, we're in a pluralistic environment. Again, let Newbegin ring loud in our ears. So what do we do with pluralism? How does the gospel move forward, so to speak, in a pluralistic environment? Is it sufficient then just to be like really relational people, just to be like kind, warm, interested neighbors? Or is that a different kind of reductionism?
Right,
do we fall into a different yeah. trap where we're ignoring that complexity? Because I agree. I think the right. complexity is what kind of tempts us as missionaries reaching for tools to reduce mission to techniques or you know, some kind of communicative levers that we can knobs that we can adjust, and if we do this, that, and the other, then here's the gospel now, and it's understandable across this cultural barrier or something, you know? And so that kind of technique thinking it can become a crutch. It's a way of dealing with that complexity. And it's helpful to us to an extent that we tend to overcompensate. But then I wonder, Martin, is it overcompensation in the other direction to go like, well, that's not really what, you know, that's not what missiology is about. It's about these relationships and the way that we encounter God and the other, and therefore cooperate with God, participate with what God is doing in the life of the other. And we can do that with our neighbors without, as you say, without a degree, without significant training. And I want to say, well, fair enough. But then what's the point of acknowledging that cultural difference? Is it really nothing, actually?
Right. Yeah. Yeah, and I think the other reductionism with certain like approach, like relational approaches or relational emphases, is the idea that you know we can just be a happy kumbaya community, right? So I'm gonna get my, you know, my she's from Denmark, the New Age lady, and my neighbor Veep, and my other neighbors are, you know, they're Filipino. I've got African American friends right across the street. I've got, you know, the idea that we can all just get along, right? Let's just be friends. I mean, I think that there is a way of doing, or even of talking of relationality that is, it just takes difference and it crushes it into sameness, right? Mm-hmm. It takes the diversity and the complexity and it makes it not complex.
Yeah.
You know, so I mean, when I think personally, when I think about relationality, so when I use the term, and I think this is the way that, you know, Eddie is using the term as well. It's, you know, it's, I'm treating you in relationship like you are a full human being, right? With all of your complexity, with all of your story that you're coming to the table with. And in the midst of all of that, you know, there's going to be differences that you and I are constantly going to be facing. You and I are going to have differences, and, you know, and that's actually where relationship happens, right? Where I can meet you in the difference and we can work together to grow the relationship, work together to respond to the Spirit and what God is doing in our neighborhood. But I think about that, you know, maybe that's what relationship is about. It's actually about the difference and meeting there in the midst of all the complexities, in the midst of all of the, well, and the thing is, right? I mean, we don't do that kind of relationality well in our culture right now, right? I mean, there's just so much polarization. I mean, we don't
do that well within a monocultural environment. I mean, even where, you know, I live in a pretty homogenous place here in Middle Tennessee. I mean, there are certainly cultural and ethnic others on the margins that get overlooked in the sense that we are all the same and they are actually not us, right? But yeah. but aside from that, the majority of people are very similar culturally. Mm-hmm. And within that system, there is radical polarization.
Yeah, like absolutely.
Broken relationships among neighbors.
Yeah.
And so when you add in then radical alterity, the real deep otherness of some of our neighbors that cause us even to overlook them. I mean, we don't even have a way of knowing how to relate. We just kind of try not to in many circumstances.
And
I'm talking about in this part of the country. That's probably not a fair characterization of more metropolitan places in the United States, but I think it represents a lot of our country.
Yeah. No, I think that it is. I mean, when I think about my own congregation and the struggle we've had over the last, you know, is especially the last 8 years, maybe not that long, but just political differences. Mm-hmm. You know, do we sit in the same pew with people that are maybe if I'm red, they're blue. Mm-hmm. They're blue, I'm red. We just have a hard time doing relationship amidst differences. Yeah. So that's a real complexity. And it's a complexity that exists, you know, in quote unquote monocultural contexts like yours. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's part of that complexity that that for me, it actually causes me to go back to relationship, because I'm like, that's the kind of complexity that there's no training for. You cannot train for that, right? There's no way that you can get like enough degrees that's going to prepare you for all the crazy things that are going to come up in the midst of your complex, you know, group dynamics. You've got to come back to that deep desire to, you know, to make this friendship work.
Yeah.
You know, to foster friendships.
Yeah. Well, and so, you know, but maybe it's the case if we could somehow marry the two, that true intercultural skillfulness, I mean, you know, the best anthropologist is actually motivated by an authentic desire to relate to and know and understand the other, right?
That's right.
Cultural other. And so, there's really not, there's not an absolute break between these two ideas, but it is the case that unfortunately sometimes missiology gets instrumentalized into a set of techniques and ways of managing communication and cultural difference in order to kind of produce certain gospel outcomes.
Or even, you know, to borrow, you know, Eddie's language, you know, how do we help the church survive? You know, I mean, he talks about his church growing up, right? How do we help the church? There's this church that he grew up in that it was incredibly dynamic and no longer exists, right? That's a jarring moment when in the interview when he's like, right at the beginning, he's like, so here's how I got into this. Speaking of that, like that way in which we can instrumentalize, you know, we're answering questions like that as well. And sometimes those can become very reductionistic questions that we even ask, right? So how do we help the church survive?
Yeah, as though that were the goal, which throws us to the other, you know, the added complexity, right? Because as far as I can see, where mission is concerned, the root issue isn't the church's ability to adapt to rapid cultural change, difficult as that is and important as that is. I mean, I would love to see my congregation where I worship more adaptable in terms of cultural difference and more prepared to bridge those sorts of gaps.
Yeah, they're noticing neighbors, they're noticing the people moving in, they're noticing the immigrants, they're noticing the way that, you know, their children are different generationally than themselves. They're noticing all of the complexities. But what were you getting at? You're saying, but
I think there's actually a deeper adaptation.
Yes.
Because it's more about, rather than rapid cultural change, it's about a responsiveness to the rapid change in terms of what God is doing.
That's right. Exactly.
Yes. Right. That the Spirit is moving, that there are new moments, new relationships, new opportunities to respond to as God's people. And that responsiveness, perceiving those things and responding to those things faithfully.
Yes.
I think is a level deeper, or at least one level deeper than the question of cultural change, responsiveness to cultural change. So when I look at a church that's dying, if the diagnosis is, well, they didn't know how to adapt to the culture as it changed, I think, well, I don't know. I think maybe they didn't know how to adapt to the Spirit doing a new thing.
Right.
In their midst.
Yeah. The spirit is moving in our neighborhood and we're not attentive to it. And the thing is that the Spirit is constantly moving. So we talk about the complexity of cultures nowadays, and in, you know, rightly so, we talk about cultures being, you know, internally diverse. We talk about cultures being fluid and in flux, right? Not having firm boundaries. We talk about all of those complexities and they're moving, right? That idea of moving. And for those of us who, you know, are working with, are doing our best to live in the Missio Dei, we're thinking about movement on a more profound level, right? We're thinking about movement, not just of my neighbors and their ways of conceiving of the world and being in the world, but God's ways of being in the world, God's ways of being in relationship. And anyway, I'm just repeating what you just said, but I think about that, the complexity.
Well, you need to, though. You got to put it in better words.
But it's so true. And the thing is that this brings up, honestly, at this, you know, this brings up something that Eddie, like, maybe is kind of a difference in emphases for me, maybe for both of us, in this, like, what is missiology? And what if for missiology, we're asking, our primary question is related to Missio Dei, right? So what is God doing in my neighborhood? How is it that God's asking me to participate in my community, to participate in what God is doing? Instead of how is it that I can, you know, help my church survive? How do I become even how do I become missional can become a question that's not necessarily foregrounding the agency of God.
Right.
And that's, you know, so there's a, I noticed that in my own listening as I was, listening to the interview. I was thinking about that. I was thinking about different approaches to missiology.
Yeah, well, in your question about, I think your question in the interview process that you've utilized for all of our episodes so far, the question regarding the agency of God, is the most difficult. It's the most challenging. It's the one that every time I listen to the interview, I think, I don't know how I would answer that. I mean, I think because I'm so often inattentive to that.
Right.
And, exactly. And like Dr. Gibbs, you know, you, I think he struggled a little bit to answer that question overtly. And then you did some interpretive work there to help him sort of articulate. It was retrospective, right? And for me, it so often is. Like, I don't recognize God at work until well after the fact. And then you start connecting the dots and go like, oh, that was God. I wasn't really paying attention very well in the moment. So I think that's...
Yeah.
It's a really important question. It's a really difficult question. It's a question that's at the heart of the definition of missiology, really and truly, of maybe the,
yes,
the cutting edge of missiology, as I hope it would be in the future, right? A field of study that is centered on that question of what is the triune God doing in the world, and how are we responding faithfully to that?
Yeah, and maybe it's true that even for those of us who are doing our best to respond to God's agency and God, we're trying to discern, right, with our community. So I'm a minister with my church, with my team, our leadership team. We're constantly trying to foster a community that is discerning and walking with the Spirit. But maybe it's always true that, we notice God's agency in more, like, a little bit more clearly in retrospect. In fact, it becomes very difficult to be in relationship with people who don't do that, right? People who are like, I know what God is doing right now, and what God is doing is this.
Oh, brother.
You know?
Yeah, I find that very off-putting, and it's not just because of my not-so-charismatic background. It's extremely challenging when somebody says, God told me to say or do X, Y, or Z, and I think, really?
Yeah. Or they're just so sure of their stance theologically on something. I mean, they're just positive that they have that direct line to God, and that they know exactly what God wants with regard to whatever question it happens to be. And I'm like, man.
Yeah, it just strikes me as the opposite of the humility implicit in a posture of responsiveness to God's agency. It's a posture that says, I'm humble enough to pay attention here. And that means I'm humble enough to be at least a little cautious about what I think we're going to do next.
Right.
Because, you know, the lack of caution about that in mission is what we call colonialism ultimately, right? It's say, we knew what was supposed to happen here. And then in retrospect, we have to go, God forgive us for all the assumption, all the presumption in what God told us to do.
It's pastors, you know, to borrow Eddie Gibbs, you know, it's pastors that are building little empires, right? I mean, you're leaders building little empires.
Yeah.
And the thing is, you don't have to be a pastor to try to build that little empire, right? To claim that you have direct access, you know, there's nothing provisional about your understanding of what God is doing in this moment.
Which, to that point, I really liked his emphasis on team building or accountability. He mentioned that a couple of different ways, precisely because, you know, the listening church is a church that listens together, right? That's a big problem with anybody who's saying, let me tell you what God told us to do, is they're sort of circumventing the whole community's discernment together, and being in that listening posture as a community is I think quite different than simply speaking from on high as the arbiter of God's will.
You know, one of the things that I really liked about his interview is I really liked the he describes sitting in on McGavern's class with his two friends from Europe, and they're just poking fun at McGavern. You know, they're making light of maybe some of the reductionisms that they themselves notice right there in the class in conversation with Donald. And they're like, you know, there's some aspects of this that In fact, we're going to write a song about church growth. We're going to write a hymn about church growth. And I appreciated that. I appreciate the kind of, you know, chronic, just critically self-reflective. He is critically self-reflective. I think he models that even in the interview. But,
yeah,
you know, noticing that even the term emergent church, for instance, he kind of, you know, wait, that term has become, you know, it's become a consumer term. It's become something that's been marketed. And that's not what, you know, just recognizing those shifts and the ways that we need to hold some of these concepts lightly, right? It goes back to that humility. We're holding a lot of these concepts and recognizing that they are, because they're, you know, grounded in our language, in our culture, they are inherently reductionistic. And so there's a sense of humility, right?
Well, and of not taking oneself too seriously. I mean, you get that from all of his giggling throughout the interview. And he
right, yes.
You know, he doesn't take McGavern too seriously. He doesn't take himself too seriously. And I think that that's almost a spiritual gift, because when the subject matter at hand is so serious to us, it's so serious. When we begin talking about God's purposes and the kingdom of God and the reconciliation of our relationships in these broken communities, I mean, it's so serious.
It's heavy
we
stuff.
Care so much about it, you know, and to be able then to hold lightly to our understandings of how to do that and to laugh at ourselves and laugh at our mentors and understand that, you know, we are humble servants in this endeavor.
We're constantly learning, right? I'm a learner, and I have that learning posture, and that learning posture means that, you know, I can come to the conversation. I can sit in on your class. I can poke fun at you. And then that's the thing, is that McGavern can handle it, right? I mean, he was just like, yeah, I mean, there's an aspect in which, you know, this is kind of, you know, this, he doesn't get defensive. Instead, they become friends. I appreciated that. And you know, speaking of friendships, he brought up some interesting, I guess, stories that I wanted to hear. And they were stories that had to do with Wagner and Wimber. Speaking of relationality and speaking of complexity and speaking of God's agency, he brought up some, well, he said, like, and then it became complicated, you know, he said it got complicated, right? So early on.
Yeah, the relationship grew difficult.
The relationship grew difficult. That's what he said. Thank you. And then acknowledging something that's been a significant question that is very relevant within missiology right now, within these conversations. And it's the question of, what do we do with all these charismatics? What, you know, what are we supposed to do with this, you know, this question of God's agency is challenging. And it's challenging for a number of reasons. And you've got people like, you know, like Wimber and Wagner and Kraft, right? That we just recently put that interview out this season.
Yeah. So this comes up from a different angle in the Kraft interview, since he's sort of on the side with Wagner of the,
definitely not sort of, he's like
the charismatic turn. Yes. Within Fuller Theological Seminary's School of Intercultural Studies, at that time, probably not School of Intercultural Studies. It still would have been the McGavern
School of World Mission.
Yeah, School of World Missions. But my ears perked up when he was talking about that. As you said, I think our listeners will find it interesting, right? And I don't know how much more we can say about it, but it's certainly the case that relationships became strained. As some of the faculty, and I have to think that this applies as second and third wave charismatic stuff unfolded across the country, it had to be the case in other places too, right? But as people made a sort of a charismatic turn, the question of what do we do with this in our faculties, in our curricula, in our ethos as a school, how do we navigate this? And I think that's only going to continue to be a major question, because so much of the majority world is the frontier of the church and of mission, and so much of that part of the world church is in fact very charismatic. in different ways. And so I would love to hear more about those. I don't know how touchy or personal or private those stories are about relationships and so on, but it is.
You sense that there is a heaviness. Yeah. You do sense that there is a heaviness, a kind of a sense of loss. I mean, even the fact that he even paused to acknowledge that. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is something that is not, it's not unimportant, right? He had to acknowledge, like, this is, it didn't, you know, it didn't work out long term, right? You know, that's, and the question there is, it's a real question for all of us dealing with discerning communities that are trying to live into the Missio Dei, right? That are trying to walk with God. And the challenge here is there are people who understand discerning what the Spirit is doing, what God is doing. Even their approach to discernment is going to be different than our own. Yes. So, you know, can we do relationship? Are you able to be in relationship with people who don't just understand God differently, but understand how to understand where God is moving differently?
Yeah, it's very on point with our earlier conversation about God's agency and discernment, because, I mean, in my life, I've certainly learned a lot about paying better attention from my charismatic brothers and sisters. That's just a fact. You know, I've discovered blind spots in my own way of thinking and engaging with God from that tradition. And at the same time, there are real sort of challenges there. It's like, how do we do this together? Because we're not necessarily on the same page, right? And it can strain the relationships. Maybe it doesn't have to necessarily, but when it comes to that most fundamental point, at least from my perspective of the community trying to figure out together what God is doing and how to respond, those differences become pointed.
They certainly do. They certainly do. So, you know, one of the discernment processes that we're in my congregation at this time is related to, you know, women's roles and leadership. And, you know, one of the big challenges is, you know, so we answer that question, you know, in my view, we answer that question by walking with God, right? Doing our best to walk with God continuously. Maybe we don't, you know, we come up with answers that are always provisional, and you know, our assumption is that there is not a correct answer for all places at all times, because the Spirit of God moves differently in different contexts, right? So that's an assumption that I'm making and I'm bringing to the table. However, I'm working on the team with other people on my leadership team that are like, no, you know, the Spirit of God moves in like very specific ways that are really outlined in the Bible, right? And so there isn't even, discernment does not involve us, you know, looking around, you know, and asking what the Spirit is doing. Discernment involves you and me, you know, reading the text together and trying to figure out what it meant for them back then. And so, I mean, like I can just say, like, this is a very real thing for me right now. It strains relationships. Yeah. It makes it hard. And we are determined as a church at this point, you know, part of our determination is we got to go back to like, but we're still friends, right? We're going to stay. We're like, you and I, like, regardless of what happens, you and I are going to be in relationship, and we're going to do this whole loving on neighbor, loving God thing. We're going to do it together. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm going to learn from you. You're going to learn from me, and we're going to learn from our neighbors anyway. But I'm just going back to I get it. this is hard. It's not easy to stay in relationship with Wagner, right? It's not easy to stay in relationship with Wimber. It's not easy to stay in relationship with Martin.
That's what I was going to say, with me. For sure. With you.
Yeah. I was going to say it, and then I was like, nah, don't say that. Oh, just come use on. Your own name.
Remember, you need to give me opportunities to practice not taking myself too seriously.
That's so true, Greg. Honestly.
Take your shots, bro.
You know, are you done with this dissertation yet? I mean, I feel like that's
what I should bring up. Right? Okay, now wait a minute.
So, hey, when are you done with this? Like, now? Yeah, actually, you are.
Soon enough. Like, yeah. Soon enough, man. I've been grinding hard on this thing, and I'm going to be done by the end of this semester. That sucker's going to be turned in.
Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. And at that point, you're going to be able to be much more relational, even with your own wife and, with me. It's going to be so
That's what they
wonderful.
tell me. That's what they tell me. I will be more available.
Well, this has been a good conversation. A lot of good questions that that Eddie gives his interview brings up. And Greg, I appreciate a chance to sit down and chat with you about these things. And listeners, thank you for listening in and for being a part of this conversation.
Yeah, thanks everybody. Forgive us for our pace. We're gonna hopefully speed back up a little bit with release. But whatever the case, we're thankful for those of you who are hanging with us. And I hope you're enjoying these conversations.
And also, if anybody happens to have contact information for Samuel Escobar, can you please send that over? I really want to interview him, and I haven't heard back. So if anyone has a cell phone number, can you please like text that to me?
Yeah, is there anybody else on your call sheet, Martin, that our listeners can get us
So
in touch with?
yes, the other person is Mercy Odio. Oh man, what's how do you?
Odioye?
Yes, thank you. Yeah, Odioye, thank you. We honestly, man, a chance to sit down with Mercy would be amazing, and to have her on this season, if at all possible. So if anyone can give us contact information for Mercy, we've got feelers out there, and we're doing our best to get in contact with our sister and hopefully get her on the show. All right. Well, anyway, thank you, listeners. So we'll see you next time.
Thanks, everybody. Take care.